This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Happy Monday, everybody. I'm Maggie Don. You're listening to The Maggie Don Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Hope your Thanksgivings were wonderful. I got to start with a big shout out and thanks to Cardi behind the board who helped put together replay for Thanksgiving. Thank you for doing that. And also to my colleague, Jimmy Koska, for some excellent hosting on my behalf this past Friday. We talked a bit about education funding. If you missed that show, you're going to want to go check it out. Catch all of my past episodes at civicmedia.us/Maggie Dawn Show, including Jimmy's excellent discussion on Friday about school funding referendums and all that good stuff. Today, we've got a great show for you all. I am going to be joined at the bottom of this hour at 2:30 by Brenda Duke.
We're having some minor technical difficulties. Please bear with us. The magic of technology allows us to have this wonderful radio program coming to you from multiple locations, but that also means that every once in a while, computers do as computers do, and we just have to reboot everything. Hope that you all had a wonderful weekend. Let's see what we're at now. Maggie, talk for me.
Trying again. How are we doing right now? Still messed up, or are we doing okay?
It's a little better. It's definitely a little better.
Well, we'll just keep plowing on through as you guys continue to work on that. We've got a great show coming up. We've got Brendan Duke. He's the Senior Director of Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. And I'll just say this, if you folks are listening, thank you for your patience as we sort through this. And to my good friend Jess P.S. and Cardi in the booth, if y'all can queue up a rerun in case we cannot get the sound issue corrected before
we're
going to
throw some music on for now. But Maggie, can you actually just give us a call?
Okay, will do. Thanks much.
Mm-hmm. Ah, the magic of technology. It's great. It's wonderful. And sometimes it does things that we don't quite want it to do. However, you can always give us a call, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. And that's where we're going to get Maggie onto the show from here. Did you have a good weekend? I hope you all did. We're going to try this now. Maggie, talk for me.
Hi. I can't do an entire show over the phone. It's just not going to happen.
It's okay.
We're going to have to live cue a rerun.
But you're on the air now.
Oh, well, hi. I mean, I don't think I can do an entire show on the phone, but we'll give it a shot at least for this first segment as we look to solve the problem. I'm going to do a full hard reboot myself. But we've got Brendan Duke today, if we can figure out our sound issues. He's the Senior Director for Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're going to have a chit-chat about tariffs today and what actual smart tariff policy would look like. Tariffs are not in and of themselves bad, certainly, but smart tariff policy does take some work, and it is usually gradual. So again, we're going to have Brendan Duke. And of course, because it's Monday at 3:30, I'm going to be joined by Dom Salvia for, in case you missed it, Dom has got the great show that follows mine from 4 to 6 p.m. every Monday through Friday right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. But I came across an absolutely hilarious article this past weekend. Now, I do not myself like to do a lot of reading on the air, but this thing was so gosh darn funny about the futility of trying to bake a turkey that I certainly could not resist sharing a bit of the humor with you all. It was written by a guy named David Von Drayle I believe this is the Washington Post. Indeed it is. And it's titled an opinion piece because the title is, "Let's Be Honest, the Roast Turkey Was Bequeathed to Us by Satan." And I have to agree with the man. I mean, I don't mind eating turkey, but it's not my favorite thing, and I have myself attempted to roast or bake a turkey a number of times, and it always proves to be one of the most challenging culinary feats. So with that, I thought I would share with each and every one of you a few of David Von Drayle's thoughts about the bequeathing of the turkey to us all by Satan. He talks about this as being a nearly impossible culinary task, and this yearly project dating back many centuries to an individual named Satan, who specializes in devising infernal tortures. Roasting a turkey involves placing in irregular form meaty lobes, bony protrusions, fatty deposits, and empty cavities into a heated box with the mad, mad dream of bringing all the parts to perfection simultaneously. Success is rarely attained outside of the confines of a Norman Rockwell painting. He goes on saying that rather than admit the hellishness of the whole turkey, we indulge in a masochistic search for the, quote, best way to roast the bird. Soak it in water? No. Rub it with dry salt? Fill the insides with breadcrumb stuffing? No. Fill it with citrus fruit? No. Leave the inside empty? Well, you should massage it with butter or smear it with mayonnaise. No, no, no. Coat it with olive oil. Cook it breast down. Nope. Flip it over halfway through. Apply ice packs before cooking. Cover it with foil or no. Leave it uncovered. I don't know about you all, but I truly believe that trying to roast a turkey is next to gosh darn impossible. And then, of course, after you carve the thing, it becomes room temp quite fast. I've never quite figured out how to get the entirety of the Thanksgiving meal to hit the table all at the appointed time. It is a challenge indeed. But just wanted to share a little bit of that comedy with you as we open up this incredibly busy week of news. The weekend was certainly no mistake. We're going to talk about today Pete Hegseth and the new revelations coming about out about Donald Trump's purported pick to be the Secretary of Defense. We're going to talk about the appointment of Charles Kushner to be Ambassador of France. While it is a position of very little material consequence to our day-to-day lives, it's interesting nonetheless, given that Charles Kushner has done some really, really bad things. We'll talk about some of those bad things. We're also going to touch on Elon Musk's most recent threats to Alexander Vindman, the most recent Time magazine cover, and oh my gosh, Joe Biden has given his son Hunter a blanket pardon, unspecified in conduct. It is just a blanket pardon for any federal criminal wrongdoing occurring over a 10-year period of time. The only pardon I'm aware of in modern American history that stands in parallel to this was Gerald Ford's pardoning of course, Richard Nixon. That was also a very blanket pardon. We also know that Act 10, yeah, that's that union busting law that Scott Walker and the Robin Voss Republicans ushered into practice here in the state of Wisconsin. Act 10 has been overturned by a Dane County judge. This is pretty big news. It's obviously going to be appealed. Lots to unpack there. I haven't yet been able to read the decision. It's just coming in as we were getting on the air today. So a whole ton of things. But as it is Cyber Monday, I'm not going to talk about Cyber Monday because we all shop online all the time. Yep, everybody knows there's some good deals today. But what I really wanted to talk about was Giving Tuesday, because that is coming up tomorrow. And of course, Civic Media getting in on the action. We are very proud to support Giving Tuesday. So whether you're helping a neighbor or signing up to volunteer or making a donation to a local nonprofit tomorrow, you can check out how to make a difference in your own community and throughout the state of Wisconsin. Just go to civicmedia.us. It can be so hard to pick just one charity, and we've got some of our favorites listed there. Again, you can check those out at civicmedia.us. But I also wanted to give you all, ahead of Giving Tuesday, a couple of best practices when it comes to charitable giving. First and foremost, one of the things that I always check out is how much the CEOs of the various corporations are making, because if a CEO is making an absolute huge pile of millions of dollars a year, and that isn't justified by the size, scope, scale, or impact of a charity, I get a little suspicious. I don't know about y'all, but I definitely get a little suspicious about that. So let's go through some of those best practices. Jess P.S., I'm going to try to come in on the stream in the commercial break as we head up to that in just a few minutes here, just to let you all know that's what we're going to be working on. Also, let's just start with those Better Business Bureau tips for Giving Tuesday tomorrow. First of all, the Better Business Bureau itself, which is a nonprofit, has these tips. You can check them out by going to give.org. And they have all kinds of different analyses of charities, et cetera. You can get all sorts of great tips. These tips that I'm going to give you right here, those are summarized at give.org. So again, if you missed any of these, you can go check it out right there. First of all, and I thought this was an incredibly important tip, was to actually get the charity's exact name. Be sure you have the right charity name. A lot of sort of shadow organizations will try to mimic legitimate charity names. They will set up very legitimate looking websites and all that kind of jazz. So definitely be on the lookout there. If someone is asking you to give on the spot, be very wary of that, resist that pressure, and also be wary of those heart-wrenching appeals. When we come back, I'll give you a few more of those best practices right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked, y'all. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
It looms.
Familiar highways lined with leaves turn brown, making my way.
We've solved the problems. Maybe not all of them, but we solved some of our audio challenges. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My thanks to Andrew from Maine for making me crack up on the text line. Andrew's saying, hey, maybe your system's still on Thanksgiving break. Well, it's back now. We got her back in the saddle again. Before the break, I was sharing with you guys some of the Better Business Bureau tips to have a successful Giving Tuesday. Again, if you want to check out Civic Media's list of some of our favorite charities that we've already curated and vetted for you, you can go to civicmedia.us. These are generally local charities or Wisconsin-based charities that focus some of their work here in our state. But the first tip, the first couple of tips I personally think are the most important. Again, you can find these tips at give.org. That is, make sure that you have the charity's name exactly correct. You're going to want to resist pressure if somebody's asking you to make a give and give, putting a lot of time pressure on you, especially if it's a telemarketer or door-to-door solicitor. Be very wary. Be also very wary of the heart-wrenching appeals. I don't know about you, but like every time I hear the Sarah McLachlan song like dubbed over one of the animal shelter commercials, I end up crying. It's so terrible. Anyways, just keep your eyes peeled for that. Cardi, I saw you nodding along. Do you tear up with the Sarah McLachlan too, my friend?
I'm more of the Bambi guy. Like, you know, Bambi died in a movie. I'm one of those.
Yes. That'll bring some tears to Cardi's eyes. I don't know anybody who's dry-eyed through Bambi. Let's see. Also, press for specifics. It is totally fine to ask for financial reports, the breakdown or a percentage of how much of my donation actually goes to provide the services that you all are supposed to be giving to people or whatever it may be. You can ask exactly how do they measure their performance, all kinds of those things. Use your good, reasonable common sense. Ask the questions that you want to ask. Go to the website for the charity and check out the mission, its program. It should publish its finances there. All of it should be available to you. You can also check with state charity officials. Most states' charities are required to register with the state, usually with the Office of Attorney General before soliciting, so you can do that. And do not assume that everyone that is soliciting you is in fact a tax-exempt charity. You can check out their tax status at www.irs.gov/charities/nonprofits/exempt. It's a long thing. Just go to the IRS website. Y'all are smart. You can surf around and you will find whether or not, in fact, the organization that's soliciting you is indeed a tax-exempt charity. You can also check out the 20 Better Business Bureau Standards for Charity Accountability. That is all available and specific charity reports at the Better Business Bureau Wise Giving Alliance. You can just Google that. Again, that is the BBB, the BBB Wise Giving Alliance. I also wanted to share with you a couple of websites that I have used in the past to check out charities. One is charitynavigator.org. There's also charitywatch.org, as well as givewell.org. You can, we're going to put these in the show notes for today. You can check out, you can research specific charities by name. You can find out how much they pay the CEOs. Like, for example, did you know that the National Rifle Association is technically a nonprofit? It considers itself a charity. And did you know that Wayne LaPierre makes something like 1.5, 6 or 7, I forget what it is. I think it's like, it's well over $1 million a year. Yeah, that Wayne LaPierre, the guy that has resigned under a cloud of corporate malfeasance and financial mismanagement, his purchasing of expensive $10,000 suits and suites and all. Yeah, if you've donated to the NRA and you like Wayne LaPierre's super duper wardrobe, you paid for that, my friends. You paid for that. Yeah, you can check out things like how much does the charity CEO make. I spent a little time poking around. That's how I knew about the Wayne LaPierre bit. But yes, I am big on Giving Tuesday. I am going to be sitting down tomorrow morning looking at a few charities here in Wisconsin. Tomorrow, we're going to start the show right at the top. I did this last year on Giving Tuesday. I'm going to do it again this year. If you have locally based charities that you know are run in a fiscally accountable way and you want to give a shout out to some of those charities that you know are doing incredibly good work in your community, tomorrow, 2 o'clock, top of show, that is where we are going to start. Keith from Broadhead just texted in an absolutely fantastic question. He's asking about the roundup requests that you get at the checkout lanes at grocery stores. My understanding is that those tend to be organization specific, like who the grocery store is giving the money to, But I, before tomorrow, Keith from Broadhead, thank you for your excellent question. I'm going to do a little poking around. See, it is always a great conversation and real news here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where your questions, if I don't know the answers, I will go look them up. I love homework assignments, Cardi, from the listeners and callers. You want to get in on the action, y'all? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Matt from Middleton getting in on the action. He's saying, roast turkey's delicious if done right. Also, why are so many people struggling financially keep voting for a party that clearly only cares about the wealthy, not them or the rest of us? This is a fundamental question, and I think part of it is bound up in the fact that Democrats haven't taken a tough enough tack against billionaire tax breaks, right? Like, we need to do better on that. We're going to continue to dig in. We've got Brendan Duke coming up. He is the Senior Director of Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Matt, your question teased this up perfectly. We're going to talk about tariffs and what smart tariffs look like and how what Donald Trump's proposing ain't smart tariffs. All that and so much more coming up in today's show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Starting to see my grandfather in my nephew's eyes. Mom still can't talk about him and I'd almost cry. So fill your plate and fill your drink and fill this house with family. Kind of love a thousand miles can't wash away. Cause the older that I get, I see life short and bittersweet. Thank God for this Thanksgiving Day.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
I'm alone this December. It's the last light of the day. Oh, I can't help but wonder if you feel the same. Oh, I guess I'll surrender.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. To the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to get in on the action? You got questions about tariffs? For my next guest, or I, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. His name is Brendan Duke. He is the Senior Director for Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. He's been the Senior Advisor at the White House National Economic Council, Staff Director for the U.S. Senate Finance Subcommittee on Taxation. He's worked on the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, as well as the U.S. Congressional Joint Economic Committee. Thanks for coming back to the show, Brendan. It's always nice to see you. Happy belated Thanksgiving to you and yours. Before we get into tariffs specifically, I just wanted to call out this little tweet that Elon Musk put out recently. I love it when I surprise you with things that you don't know I'm going to ask you about, but he keeps it fresh. He tweeted, quote, "Delete the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. There are too many duplicative regulatory agencies." Just a reminder, y'all, like the CFPB came about in 2010 following the George W. Bush economic collapse and the complete failure of our financial institutions to actually do what works best for most middle-class Americans. Again, the mortgage crisis, blah, 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 blah. It has a very specific purpose. Its constitutional bases have been challenged. But Brendan, I just wanted to get your gut reaction or immediate reaction to, of course, Elon Musk doesn't want anybody looking out for consumer protections.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously we have multiple government agencies, but this is the only one that looks out directly for consumers. So, for example, the Securities and Exchanges Commission, they look out for investors, for example, but the CFPB focuses on consumers. They've returned billions of dollars to consumers. They have cracked down on those junk fees when it comes to, overdrawing your bank account and credit card fees and all those sorts of things. And I think, you know, Elon's tweet does point out a fundamental contradiction in Trumpism that we are going to see over the next 4 years, which is Donald Trump himself has said that he wants to cap credit card fees at 10%, but the CFPB would be the agency that would be in charge of enforcing that. And again, they have that, you know, consumer outlook that Donald Trump was talking about, but then his essentially top advisor, essentially co-president, is talking about getting rid of the agency that is in that very spirit. So again, I think we're going to see those contradictions exposed over the next 4 years.
Well, and this is why I wanted to start with it, Brendan, because I thought it was such an interesting lens into exactly this tension that we're going to see. Trump, by all accounts, I don't care who you're talking to, right, ran on this economic populism message. People believed that he is going to make their lives better for the vast majority of us that work here in the middle class and for working folks all across the economy. And the tension point is, well, when we actually start looking at the policies once they're put into action, they are going to preference extraordinarily wealthy people more. They are going to result in higher costs for middle class Americans. And the one that jumps to the top of the list for almost immediate impact if he does what he says he's going to do on day one is his tariff policy and his tariff proposal. Brendan, first, let's just set the groundwork here. What does Donald Trump propose to do literally on January 20th after, like, immediately after he's sworn into office?
Sure. So I think if we start, you know, with the beginning of his campaign, we're on tariff plan number 5 right now. So yes. What tariff plan number 5 appears to be 5.0, right, is that he is going to impose a 25% tax on every imported good from Canada, a 25% tax on every imported good from Mexico, and then a 10% tax on every imported good from China. And strange to me why you would want to tax imports from Canada and Mexico, allies and neighbors, at a higher rate than China, our geopolitical adversary. But let's leave that aside for a second. He is, you know, it's always unclear whether he's talking about this as a negotiating tactic to get other stuff, or, you know, as a way to raise revenue, or as a way to, he says he's going to create manufacturing jobs that will fail. Unclear. He has talked about trying to get, you know, wins on the border, or, you know, on fentanyl, you know, distribution. And, you know, he's met with done calls with the leaders of Mexico and Canada. He sounds like he's backed down on them, but, you know, we don't quite know what he's going to do. So, you know, it's just, and, you know, I think we are going to be doing this constantly over the next 4 years. He's going to rage post a threat on taxes on imported goods. People are going to scramble. Markets are going to do their thing. And we don't know what he'll actually do. So I think, you know, I don't think that this is going to happen until the day, you know, like it actually
happens. Enacts it.
Right. Right. But, you know, I wouldn't bet a lot of money on that either. So TBD.
He's a chaos agent. There's clearly that. And there's so much to unpack in what you just said, Brendan. And the first thing, and frankly, I'm going to use this as a shameless tease for my show tomorrow, because one of the main topics I'm going to talk about tomorrow is this idea of what is the metric by which the success of the Trump administration is going to be judged on any of these policy promises. Because remember when he was in the campaign speaking at the Chicago Economic Forum, right? He said, I'm doing this because it will bring manufacturing back. It will raise wages. It will, you know, help invigorate those families supporting manufacturing jobs. Well, is that the metric? Now, he said more recently when he announced this tariff plan, right, that until Mexico and Canada and China stop the flood of immigrants and illegal fentanyl and other drugs, that's what the tariffs are for. So, I mean, reading it most generously, excuse me, so let's just call it D, all of the above. But then again, it's sort of like, well, what's the metric? Because tariffs at a baseline have nothing to do with immigration, with migration of people caused by whatever set of factors are occurring in their country of origin. And it has nothing to do with black market illicit drug trade, which, oh, by the way, the greatest amount of that stuff is coming in with people that can legally enter the country through our normal ports of entry. So I don't know, Brendan, tell all of us and you listening at home, what is this going to mean for our daily kind of expenses? What can American families expect if indeed Donald Trump does slap 25% tariffs on everything from Canada, Mexico, and an additional 10% on everything from China.
Yeah. So let's assume he actually does this. You know, from Canada, we get a lot of oil and gas, especially, you know, states that are in the middle of the country and to the north. I don't know, like Wisconsin, tend to get their oil and gas from Canada just because of where, you know, the oil
proximity. Yes.
Right. And so even though the United States is a net exporter of oil, you know, a lot of it has to do with like the specific types of oil and where it's like located and where the pipelines are. And so it's just very, you know, Canadian oil and gas is very accessible to the upper Midwest. And so it's a 25% tax on that. You would see that at the gas pump. Mexico, a lot of things we get from there are fresh fruit in the winter. I have a three-year-old who loves berries. She will eat them in December. And
I have a two-year-old dog also loves her some blueberries. So it was
right.
I'm hearing you.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so just raises taxes on that. Avocados, you know, all those sorts of things. So that's part of Mexico. And then I think actually something all across the board is the auto industry is a integrated, it is integrated across the borders, parts across the borders, Canada, US, Mexico, seven times, you know, each just going between them all. And it's a big tax on that. And actually, ironically, this actually would help China in terms of, you know, creating more autos, in that a big part of the reason why the U.S. auto industry is still competitive is because of, you know, access, you know, because we can, you know, do those transactions cross border. And especially if we're taxing those parts 25% from Mexico versus 10% from China.
Yeah. It's penalizing our nearest trading partners more and effectively resulting in some weird economic incentive for American auto manufacturers or assemblers, as it were, right?
Yes.
We can say that auto assemblers based here in the United States to get more of their stuff from China.
Exactly.
Makes no sense. And we know what happened the last time Trump applied this ham-fisted tariff policy. He had to write a $12 billion check to farmers because he crushed so many of our agricultural exports. Which is huge in the Midwest, right? We know that it made housing starts go down. It drove up the cost of single-family homes because the cost of lumber, you know, coming from places like Canada, went way the frick up. Steel, same thing. I mean, everything got more expensive. And I wanted to just ask you about this, if you could speak on it. Here's the thing that I think is getting lost a bit in the discussion. And that is, there are valid criticisms of free trade areas. You know, it's this like neoliberal idea that, oh, we open up free trade and like all the world is going to have peace because if there's a freaking Starbucks in your country, there's not going to be a war, which is a widely kind of debunked, bogus idea that we've seen not work. Because guess what? Russia and Ukraine both have Starbucks. So I say all that to say, in the past, the idea was if the good that is being currently made in the United States costs $100 for whatever set of input costs, and if you were to import it, the good would only cost $70, for example, because you can pay labor cut-rate wages in a different country. The tariff would be $30 on that imported good, trying to maintain, right, the incentives for manufacturers to keep their businesses here. But tariff policy in the past was done almost on like a product by product analysis. It was very, you're an economist, I'm an economist. There was just a ton of analysis. Hey, how is this market responding? How would the tariff impact? Again, very detailed analysis. And we've always had some level of tariffs. So help people understand why these sort of broad across the board tariffs, just blanket tariffs on everything, is one, stupid, and two, not likely to actually lead to whatever positive outcome Trump identifies as the cause du jour, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, first of all, I think it's just worth thinking with the magnitude here. So the amount of tariff revenue we bring into the economy is, you know, before Trump took office, was 0.2% of GDP. So very small, 0.2% of GDP. When he took office, he increased that by a lot. He made that 0.3% of GDP. So that's like a 50% increase, right? What he's talking about now is, you know, with this, you know, Canada, Mexico, China thing, is about 7 times larger than what he did during his first time in office, right? And so you might think, you know, oh, it's a normal thing to do some tariffs, and, you know, he did this last time. But what he's talking about now is about 7 times larger than what he did last time. And, you know, I mean, I think the way I think about it is, if I have a headache and I take 2 aspirin, yeah, that's perfectly fine. Makes sense. Maybe I'll go big and have 3. Having 14 aspirin is probably not a wonderful idea. And so that's just how it works, is you just got to think about, like, the proportions we're talking about here. So I think that's a really key thing. And then a second part is, obviously, a big part of the reason why we talk about tariffs on, you know, certain goods is U.S. jobs, U.S. manufacturing, et cetera. But a lot of the tariffs he's talking about putting on are stuff we don't really grow here. Yeah. So from Mexico, we get, you know, strawberries in the winter. I think it's great. It's very delicious. There's only limited parts of the country where you can grow strawberries in the winter. And that's just how it is because of the geography.
Well, isn't the point that you're making the very idea of, like, a product by product assessment, right, of whether, exactly, or not a tariff policy makes sense to help keep American jobs and raise wages, right, and create? It doesn't make sense on, say, art coming from Mexico that was made by Mexico, or, you know, like, syrup from Canada that's really good. Like, that, right, is a Canadian specific product, like strawberries in the wintertime, etc. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, Brandon. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, just, I mean, you know, is it worth just building a bunch of new pipelines to, like, get Wisconsin its oil from, you know, Texas instead of getting it from Canada? For you, like, doesn't make any sense.
We're going to talk about how tariffs actually impact the markets and the time it takes for markets and industries to respond when we come back. My special guest is Brendan Duke. He's the Senior Director of Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress Fund. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Back with more in just a moment. And be like before, have I lost you? Nothing will.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Change, change, change. 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 Chain of food.
We're all getting a lot less foolish this afternoon with my very special guest, Brendan Duke. He's the Senior Director of Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've been talking about tariffs, musing as to whether or not Donald Trump will actually impose the tariffs that he has proposed. Who knows? I mean, things change from day to day, it seems. Maybe that's the point. Just as a missive from me, if Donald Trump, the most generous reading on these that I could possibly grant the president-elect is that it is a negotiating tactic, that he won't actually impose them, but it's effectively like economic brinksmanship, right? If I borrow some realpolitik sort of from former Secretary of State Kissinger, that's what I think is going on here. But again, a threat that you will not go through with is only an empty threat. It only works if people actually believe that you're going to do it. And the reality is that if in the end, the true and the most direct economic objective of tariffs is to incentivize production and manufacturing in the home country, right? But the reality is, and Brendan, you mentioned the auto industry, right? And a lot of what I would call heavier manufacturing, the auto industry has completely remade itself and has integrated, to use sort of the economist buzzword, these integrated supply chains that rely on effectively more free or less tariff exchange, especially with Canada and Mexico. And I use the auto industry because it's a great example of, okay, you put the tariffs in place. It will take years, even if you assume that a manufacturer immediately begins to alter its supply chain practices and how it is assembling or manufacturing products, to re-situs many of those component part manufacturing processes back here in the United States. It takes a long time. We're what, 25 years post NAFTA? Like, this has been generally the operating system. This can't, the goal, if you, again, assume that it is to bring American manufacturing back, restore jobs, raise wages, get middle class people, that's going to take years of sustained, again, in the more appropriate parlance, focus tariffs. But even if you accept that across the board tariffs might get us there, can you explain a little bit to people why this is so problematic and how the heck should we be measuring whether or not this is a success if Donald Trump indeed does this?
Right. So I think these are just very big costs. So, yes. For example, you know, when I did a rough calculation of what he Rage posted, it would cost a typical family $1,300 annually. And, you know, not just one time, but you're what, $1,300 as the years go on. So it's a very big cost. And again, if it can create good manufacturing jobs, okay, that's an interesting discussion worth having. But again, he's taxing stuff that we are not going to ever replace. And so it means buying fewer fresh strawberries. It means just paying more for gas in Wisconsin and not buying other stuff. And so again, it just doesn't, that part does not make any sense. And then again, those countries are going to retaliate and hurt, you know, U.S. producers. And I think, you know, a big thing is that, hey, you know, maybe we'll export, you know, fewer, less food outside of the U.S. and that'll make the cost of food in the U.S. cheaper. Look, I think corn is great.
But I don't think corn every day.
Right, exactly. Sorghum, you know.
I've never had sorghum directly.
Right. Exactly. Right. And versus all these things we get from Mexico, which, you know, like strawberry, you know, like all of the avocados, all these fresh fruits, right? It's kind of funny that RFK is talking about making America healthy again. Well, it turns out that all of our imported food is actually
fruit and veg. Yeah.
We've got just about
a little over a minute left, yeah. Brendan.
Yeah.
Tell people, one, again, why does this matter to Wisconsinites? And two, yeah, how should people think about whether or not this is going to be successful? What's the metric?
Yeah, so I think actually a big part of it, which we haven't even gotten into, but I think is really worth honing in on, is that Donald Trump is planning to use these tariffs to raise money and then cut taxes tilted toward wealthy people to them. So people are going to, you know, these companies are going to import this stuff, pay more, raise prices, and he's going to use that money, turn around and give it to very wealthy people. So I think that is the whole part of this, is this is like essentially like if, you know, Governor Evers had the terrible idea of raising the Wisconsin sales tax and then using that to cut taxes for wealthy Wisconsinites, that would be a very bad idea, and you would be up in arms about it, and your listeners would be up in arms and about it. And that's kind of what Donald Trump's proposing doing here with these tariffs. So manufacturing, but really tax cuts for the wealthy is kind of what this is all about.
I thank you so much for that. I'll just say this. One, the stuff that you buy frequently is going to cost more, gas and food. So the next time you see your gas prices go up after January 20th, Donald Trump did that. When your egg prices, when your McMuffin is still really expensive, Donald Trump did that by any estimation. And the second thing is he's going to use that money to give billionaires like Jeff Bezos, Warren Buffett, and Elon Musk even bigger tax cuts. This is a shifting of the funding of federal government from taxes on the wealthiest to sales taxes on all of us. Thank you so much to Brendan Duke, Senior Economic Policy Advisor at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. I'm sure you'll be back again because it's going to be a rocky 4 years. Thank you for helping to make us all smarter. Keep it locked, folks. We're going to talk about the Biden pardon when we come back after the top of the hour. News, weather, and sports are up next. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us for the pardon discussion, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. What do you think? Should he have pardoned his kid or not? We discuss next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.